Welcome to the Compassionate Educators Show. I am your host, Marie Cooney, former school counselor, social worker, current homeschooling mama, and entrepreneur. I'm on a journey to share insights and inspiration that just might transform the way we interact with our students, our children, and our communities. I will share with you stories from the front lines while working with children of all ages and with families of all backgrounds. Join me as I weave in interviews with other remarkable, compassionate educators from around the globe as we uncover innovative ways to guide today's children on a path of empathy and joy while fostering resiliency and celebrating diversity. Whether your students or children are learning in a classroom, at home, in nature, or online, welcome to Season 2 of the Compassionate Educators Show. So grateful to introduce you to today's guest, Andrew Jordan Nance. Andrew is the founder of Mindful Arts San Francisco, whose mission is to provide literary and arts-based mindfulness instruction to youth at underserved San Francisco schools. They currently have more than 40 people on their team virtually teaching. Andrew has been an educator for over 25 years, and he is the author of 4 mindfulness books, including the popular Puppy Mind, which you may have on your bookshelves right now. Thank you, Andrew, for being here today.
Yes, thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, so wonderful. And this is just so relevant to our time right now. More than ever, it seems that we need reminders of being present, being mindful, and helping our students and our own children as well to really navigate self-regulation and just the uncertainty that life has brought to us.
Yeah, I really do think this time has shined a spotlight on mental health, you know, and both for adults and for kids. You know, we don't really have anything if we don't have mental health, you know. It all starts from how we're feeling about every day, every moment, and the lens in which we see it. So I think it's a really valuable life skill, and I'm really glad that so many teachers are reaching out to us. You know, we actually, in the middle of summer, as we were ramping up to try to bring mindfulness volunteers into the schools, we wondered if anyone would respond, any teachers would respond, any volunteers would respond to our needs. And yes, we have more teachers than we have volunteers. And now this week, we started asking current volunteers, would you be willing to take on a second and third class?
I love that there's so many people who are inspired to do this work. And I would love to know, Andrew, what has led you to start Mindful Arts San Francisco?
Great question. Yeah, about 7 years ago, I left a theater school that I was running called New Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. And I really didn't know what I was going to do, but my mom had just passed. And I just felt like, you know, this is a long chapter of my life. I'd been there for 18 years. And I just wanted to do something new. So I stumbled into mindfulness through the Greater Good Science Center, which is a program out of UC Berkeley. And they have week-long symposiums for teachers to learn social and emotional learning. And that particular year, they really did focus quite a bit on mindfulness, neuroplasticity, and I really got hooked. You know, they were actually playing mindful games with the teachers, and it reminded me of my theater training. So I thought, this is a perfect next step for me, because I'd been trained, at New York University, and had, just been in lots of plays and taught. And it just felt like a really organic next step for me to take what I had learned for the stage and bring it into life. Because what I found, I think, in that symposium specifically, is I had this aha moment where I realized that theater training and mindfulness training are almost identical. They both ask the the participant to be in the present moment, to really connect with your mind, body, and heart so that you can fully connect with the other people around you, you know, on stage. And of course, that's what we want to do in life. We want to be fully present for the people in our lives and be fully skillful for the people in our lives. And theater training teaches just that. I say the difference is that in theater, we do want to be as reactive as possible, right? So if you and I are on stage together, we want to, you know, pull out guns or throw a frying pan or, you know, whatever the scenario might be. Mm-hmm. But in life, we really want to make smarter choices that don't hurt people or ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really neat perspective of how similar it can be. So how do you utilize that for students? How do you take that perspective of coming in from the theater and combining it with mindfulness and right. your teachings with children?
Right. I typically don't bring up the similarities because I am working with elementary school students, you know, pre-K through fifth. But what I do know is that I just go in with that lens of, okay, what was engaging for me in theater class? What was engaging for me during a rehearsal process or engaging for my actors if I were directing them? And so I play theater games with them. I'll play something called Mindful Museum, where they all have to be totally frozen if I'm looking at them. And then if I turn my back, they get to move around. So that teaches us that we can control our bodies anytime we want. And that's also what meditation teaches us, is that we can be the kind parent to our bodies. Even though we want to itch or twitch during a sit, we know that our best choice is to just notice the itch, because life is full of itches, and just let the itch pass. So we'll play that game. There's another game I love called What Are You Feeling? And actually we could play it now. And so basically if I were on a Zoom call, I could either private chat you, or I could say, all right, everyone, close your eyes. I'm going to tell Marie, I'm going to give Marie, an emotion. So I might show up a little flashcard that has anger on it, or I might chat you and say the word is anger. And so you have to act it out. And what's also fun is I wouldn't tell them that I was contacting you specifically, but I'm going to contact one of you and give you an emotion, and one of you has to act it out. So then we're all.
That sounds fun. They get to be kind of like spies then, right?
Marie. And so, if you would, Marie, just pretend something is annoying you. You know, it's not like global warming annoying, but, you know, something mildly annoying. There you go. So, Marie, so are you tense or relaxed right now if you're angry?
I'm really tense.
Right. Do you feel hot or cold when you're angry?
I get really hot when I'm angry.
Yeah. Do you feel like your heart is beating fast or slow?
Really fast. Right. I can feel it.
Perfect. Do you feel like your mind is busy or still when you're angry?
Oh, my mind is so busy. I'm always thinking about things.
Perfect. And did I ask you this? Do you feel big or little when you're angry?
Oh, I feel really big when I'm angry.
Excellent job. Excellent job. So take a breath for me and wiggle your toes and shake your shoulders and just let that anger go. Because often with big emotions like anger, they can stick around. And that's one thing I like to remind them to do is, you know, just shake your shoulders, shake your hands, take that breath, and kind of just do a reset for the whole body. Because otherwise the body hasn't been told that it's not on high alert, right? Our minds have been told that, you know, but we haven't sort of done a conscious body scan. You know, okay, it's over, the danger's passed, and now we can go about our day. So that's one thing I really try to do is make sure they shake it off, because I think I've said this in the past, you know, animals that have been chased by, you know, a lion or a hawk or something they shake off the tension if they survive. So that's something I think we really could teach our kids more often is just, you know what, we just had something big happen to us. You know, maybe we're excited, maybe we're nervous, maybe we're scared, but you know, that's past. So let's shake it off so we can mm-hmm. be skillful. You know, and also just take that breath. You know, I think really, if we can teach kids to shake off emotions, you know, just like Taylor Swift.
Right, exactly.
breath, they can start training their minds and their bodies to be just more more connected to their consciousnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you really bring the awareness too, because so many times a student or even as adults, we have that big emotion that comes up, and until we're really able to identify it, bring awareness to it, we really can't shake it off, right? Because we aren't having that time to self-reflect.
Yeah. So it's just like the body is always whispering to us, you know, 24/7. What do they say? We think we're thinking creatures that sometimes feel, but it's really the reverse. We're feeling creatures that sometimes think. You know, the body is always having an emotional response to something, whether it's, oh, I feel calm, or I feel peaceful, or I feel bored, you know, but it's not until we're having an uncomfortable experience that we realize that we're emotional creatures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so many times throughout the day when students have these emotions that come up that if anyone follows along with zones of regulation, for example, there's mm-hmm. the green zone when you are calm, when you're ready to learn, but all of these other emotions come up, the anger or frustration or moving into the just tired or the restless or the really excited, but you're not focused. So all of these different emotions come up during the day. What is a way that teachers and parents with their children at home can really help children navigate those big emotions? I know that you gave us some ideas, but do you have some additional tools that they can use?
Absolutely. So I really think a personal mindfulness practice is really valuable to oneself as an adult. So you have the wherewithal to know how to take a breath, how to notice your own uncomfortability around an uncomfortable feeling, you know, in front of you. Because so often we are quick to kind of squelch the emotion of the child, you know, like, oh, come on, it's okay, sweetie. You know, even if it's not mean-spirited, it's usually, oh, it's okay, you can do that tomorrow. Or, you know, you kind of, we tend to get right to the story of the situation rather than just, let's just be with the emotions that are coming up right now. So often what I'll do with a kid in the hallway is if I see them feeling bad, or I've even done this on a Zoom call. You know, there was a little girl, I forgot her name, Hennessy's was her name. And I said, oh, Hennessy's, look, it's like you're having a big emotion. And she was, you know, she's like four. And she's like, yeah. And so I did that body scan with her. And then I said, do you think you can take a deep breath and wiggle your toes for me? And she was so proud of herself and so elated that it was gone. So for the next 20 minutes, 15 minutes that we were in class together, she was, you know, in the green zone. And so if we validate kids' experience without making them feel crazy or stupid, which well-meaning adults often do, you know, it's just a toy, we'll be back tomorrow, you know, big boys don't cry, you know, whatever it is, even if it's said in the nicest way, makes the child feel a little crazy. And that's no fun for a four-year-old mind to experience.
Right. So just validating that emotion for the child, letting them know it's okay. Right.
Curious. That's what's so fun about emotions is if we let them hang around rather than push them away, they're actually fun. You know, like when I'm angry at someone, I'll be like, oh, this is an opportunity. You know, I'm going to just check in. Oh, anger's in my neck. Anger's in my fists. Anger's in my belly. Oh, anger makes me warm. My face is burning up. You know, then suddenly I'm not trapped by the emotion, and my body, which is that most primal part of ourselves, isn't in charge anymore. The more conscious, wise parent that my mind hopefully is most of the time is in charge. So the anger sort of dissipates, because I actually feel a lot of those uncomfortable emotions like anger and whatnot, are old wounds, right? From our childhood, or from the past. So if you're four, you still have a past, right? You know, like for me, so I'll tell you something personal. I had deaf parents. They could not hear. So imagine what my trigger might be when I'm not heard, when I'm not understood. Right. So all this sensation happens in my body when I don't feel heard or understood. And so what I do is I tend to those wounds in a really loving way. And then I can be skillful with my emotional experience. And I say, you know, that really frustrates me when you don't listen, or whatever the topic may be. And I'm able to be a better communicator at the same time. So it's really exciting to welcome any emotions, just like there's a great poem by Rumi called The Guest House. And if you haven't read it, it's definitely something I'd put on your refrigerator or something. And it just invites you to welcome every emotion and invite them in for tea, because there's so much to learn when they show up.
Beautiful. I'll definitely have to look that up. And just being curious, yeah. What a great example that we can set for children too, if we just get curious as well.
Yeah. And then they feel safe. Like if you have a big smile on your face, when you're asking them these questions, they feel safe. And of course we want to get down to their level and never tower over a child. They just get curious with you and playful with you. You know, I hate the idea that emotions are negative or positive. I really want us to kind of flip the switch on that and just call them big emotions or uncomfortable emotions, difficult emotions, you know, whatever it is, but let's not label some part of ourselves as negative, because that doesn't feel very good, you know?
Right. Yeah, I can see how significant that could be in children being able to identify their emotions, express them. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important shift. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. And you brought up the word poem, and I heard that you have a poem.
Yes.
I would love for you to share that with us.
Yeah. So I'd say this probably once or twice a day, maybe more. And I specifically do it during meditations, especially if I'm meditating in the morning and I'm not quite awake yet. I need some sort of anchor, some sort of focal point to keep me in the present. So this poem is something all the kids know. And I have a great story to tell you about this poem when I'm done with it. But basically what I like to do is I just put my fingers together, so my fingertips are touching, and with every breath in, we're going to make our fingers turn into a big ball or sphere. And you can either keep your fingers touching or separate them, but I like to keep them touching. And this is how it works. Repeat after me. With this breath, my mind grows stronger.
My mind grows stronger.
So I can focus. A little longer. I breathe in through my nose. And out through my mouth. That's what focus time.
Is all about.
And that's the poem. I love it too. It's really sweet. And it just helps me, you know, and it's fun to do it with a little smile on your face, because putting a smile on our faces actually sends all sorts of information to the brain that tells us we're safe. So even if you don't feel like smiling, try smiling and maybe you'll be glad you did. But of course, if it doesn't feel comfortable, don't do it. But this young boy, he was in first grade. He went to the doctor with his auntie, and he has had a, you know, very challenging life, lots of hardships, lots of, you know, trauma and being left behind and things like that. And so the doctor's office naturally wasn't a really safe place for him. He didn't feel safe there. So when the doctor tested his blood sugar, blood pressure, it was through the roof. And I don't know if it was the auntie or him, but one of them said, well, let's do the poem. Let's do the poem. That always helps me calm down. And so we did the poem, and the doctor took the blood pressure again, and his blood pressure had dropped to normal levels. Mm. And so in just, you know, that 45 seconds, he was able to do something skillful for his body and his heart and his mind. And I think the doctor even wrote the poem down. So she's
That's beautiful.
So
magic poem. do you have a title for it, Andrew? What is the title?
I call it either the puppy mind poem or the mindful poem. But I do like the magic poem. Sounds like a good title for a children's book, actually.
yes.
So that's it. And there's a little longer version of it that I share with like fourth and fifth graders, and they get a kick out of it using it as well. And they're very proud of themselves for memorizing it.
Mm. Well, anything that takes a minute to practice and can really help get our bodies and our minds and our breaths refocused is well worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and finding that rhythm, you know, it's like a mantra or like a song. You know, sometimes we'll sing a song around the house to help us get in a good mood or calm us down or get us excited. Mm-hmm. So this poem, I think, helps people get grounded and focused and calm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that you have a few really fun books that you have written for children, and you have another guide as well. Can you tell us more about those?
Yeah, so my first book was called Puppy Mind, and that's by Parallax Press, and that's all about a little boy whose mind wanders like a puppy, and it's a bestseller for Parallax, so I'm really proud of that book. And then the second book is called The Lion in Me, and it's all about how to name and tame our inner beast. And it's a really fun kind of Where's Waldo book, because on almost every page, there's a lion hiding somewhere on the page. So that's a really fun one. And the kids are always excited when they find the lion, because it could be in the shadows, or it could be in the mirror or in a puddle and things like that. So,
oh, that is fun.
It is a fun one. And also it talks about, you know, what we were doing is where emotions show up in our bodies, and then what we can do about it, you know, like from taking a walk with a teacher, or going and having some quiet time, or just taking some deep breaths. So it gives you some protocols to follow when you are having those big emotions. And then also I do want to say that I really don't believe that anger needs to disappear. I just think we need to be skillful with what we do with it. So that's also something I appreciated about the book, is that it's okay to be angry. It's just not okay to be mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's so true with emotions. There is a purpose and a reason for all of our emotions. And so to really push them aside devalues just our natural expression. And so there is a protective factor too to some of the emotions that we sometimes discount.
Yeah. And I think you're right. Like, I think I heard an expression just about a week ago, which really resonated with me, that we devalue our emotions at our own peril. And I really found that really true, you know, especially men. You know, I have more men friends than women friends. And I said to a group of them, recently, I said, you know, I don't want to just have activity partners. I want to have meaningful conversations with all of you that are scary and challenging and exciting and worthwhile. Otherwise, you know, it's just not that exciting. You know, I want to really feel like, you know, your family. And that just doesn't happen, you know, by chance or magically. You know, meaningful relationships are no accident. So it was really, and I was really gladdened to hear that they really appreciated that and were thankful that I brought that up, because it's really easy, especially for men, to just talk about, you know, the weather or the mountains or, you know, let's go biking or let's go swimming or whatever, but not like, how are you really doing? You know, this has been a really hard year, you know, big right. question. So anyway, my last, or actually I've got two more books. So Mindful Arts in the Classroom is a whole curriculum, which is almost 200 pages filled with art activities, theater activities, like the ones we were doing, as well as stories, including the texts for The Lion and Me and Puppy Mind. And then my last book, which I just love, I love all of them, but this one is just so beautiful. It's called The Barefoot King. And it's just has all these beautiful jewel tones. And it's all about a young king, an inexperienced king, who stubs his toe and makes this really rash decision that jeopardizes the whole kingdom. Mm-hmm. But finally, he learns that the change needs to start from within mm-hmm. his own mind, so that he can move through the world more skillfully. I think it really helps kids of any age, including adults, get the principles that mindfulness starts from within, and we can't have the world we want without looking inward first.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. That's so true. And I think your puppy agrees.
He is the cover model for Puppy Mind, the book.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Funky golden retriever. And then lastly, I've got these breathing cards, which are 50 different ways to breathe, from Spidey breathing to Puppy Mind breathing, where the poem is in there as well in the cards. And then there's dolphin breathing and snake mm-hmm. breathing and all sorts of cool ways to breathe that kids love to do. And then you know, what's fun on a Zoom call is you can say, you know, pick a number between 1 and 10, and then I'll count the cards, and the 10th card is how we'll breathe that day. So, mm-hmm. so it's fun. So gives them a chance to have some ownership of the class for that moment.
Well, I love how you have so many ideas for both in the classroom and during Zoom meetings and at home. So you really have the whole array of how children are showing up and learning and interacting. So that's really fabulous. And I was going to ask you, your Mindful Arts in the Classroom book,
yeah.
is that for a specific age range?
I would say it's for K through fifth, but I know people who have used it for middle school students. You know, I think if you wanted to use it for middle school students, you just give them more agency over it. So they read the text, they lead more of the meditations, that sort of thing. But otherwise, I think they're fairly sophisticated concepts. So I think you can go all the way up to eighth grade. And I've had some adults say, oh, I was going to give it to my nephew, but boy, it's so interesting. And I love the way you talk about certain concepts. You know, I've never heard it spoken this way. And so they often keep it and then get a copy.
That's great.
Yeah.
So many great tools and ideas. And I'm curious your perspective on what is the outcome when we have, you know, our students practicing mindfulness, when we are models, right, to the youth around us. What is that long-term outcome of doing that, of showing up and, again, modeling emotions and helping our students navigate that?
Right. Well, I don't know about you, but if you know, my family wasn't necessarily calm all the time. You know, we weren't a mean family to each other, but there were a lot of ups and downs. My father had a temper. And, you know, I learned those behaviors unwittingly through him. So I think if we can really, like you say, model these mindful behaviors and techniques, then kids, since they're, you know, sponges and they're looking to feel safe in their communities, they will model those behaviors as well and want to teach them to the rest of the household. You know, I have kids all the time saying, you know, my little brother was having a tantrum, so we did breathing ball breath together or Spidey breathing or whatever. So I really just think getting this information to kids is extremely valuable, and getting it to the parents and the teachers that care for them is huge. And one of the, I think, great things about Zoom, especially like with the pre-K classes and the kindergarten classes, is that the parental units, like the aunties and the moms and the dads and the grandparents, are not too far away from the computer. So they're, I can hear them saying the poem along with their kids. I've had so many parents say, you know, we used the poem the other day because Hector was having a moment, or Johnny or Susie or whoever. It's pretty cool. But it just has to get into sort of the ethos of the family. You know, it's like drinking water. We just have to drink in these mindfulness practices as a matter of course. So it just feels like habits, because frankly, aren't we all just a bunch of habits, right? And we just have to learn new ones that serve us better than our old ones often.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And I've heard that if you just make a 1% shift, right? Make a 1% shift each day, a new habit. And what happens over 100 days is that you have a 100% shift in that new habit formation.
That's cool. I like that. Mm-hmm. And that does not seem that hard, does it? To focus on one thing a day to try to change, and then continue doing it daily for, you know, 100 days. Doesn't seem that hard, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and I will say, mindfulness to me is a very simple concept. You know, it's about checking in with your breath, checking in with your five senses. And yet it's not easy. You know, that's why it's a lifelong practice. Lately, actually, what I've been doing when I meditate, and I will say that I do think meditation is extremely valuable, and I do it every day, pretty much. Sometimes there's a glitch, but I also think bringing those mindfulness practices in throughout your day, you know, when you're walking down the street, really feel your feet on the concrete. What do you hear as you're walking down this street? What do you smell? What do you see? Really training the mind to notice things more, both internally and externally, is really part of the mindfulness practice. So I was going, I had a thought with that as well, and I can't remember where I was going, but just to really keep cultivating not only a daily mindfulness practice of meditation, but how do I bring that into my day?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I just think we so often, we're on these all day long, right? On our phones, mm-hmm. and or in front of a screen. And so just taking some time to step away from those screens and connect, as you said, with our senses.
Yeah.
To go outside and pay attention in nature. I mean, those just a few minutes a day, creating that new habit really can make a big difference.
Yeah. They say all of us typically are stuck in a general sense of fight, flight, or freeze all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And that's really sad, because we weren't like that, I think. You know, there were times, even in, you know, even cave people, you know, there were times where you were in your cave and you felt safe, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't feel that so much anymore for a lot of people in the, on the planet. You know, there's a lot of food insecurity, a lot of health insecurity, obviously. I mean, we're all, I think, waking up going, you know, what's that sore throat, or, mm-hmm. you know, I feel warm, you know, there's this constant barrage of worry, I think, that kind of wants to creep into our consciousnesses, and, mm-hmm. and we have to kind of notice that and tend to it in a more skillful way than ever. And I think mindfulness is a great tool for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I so appreciate this conversation. And again, it comes at the right time, and it is challenging for, you know, us as adults. We are modeling for the children, and it can be really challenging during these times to do that. However, the more safety we can create for our children, for ourselves, the stronger that we can be.
And the more they can navigate the storms that are inevitably going to be in their lives, you know. Mm-hmm. I think often people gravitate towards meditation and mindfulness to kind of have a more flatline life, you know. But that's just not what life is, you know. We're always going to have ups. We're always going to have downs. It's how we ride the waves of those downs and ups that really matter, because, you know, things happen.
Right.
If you live long enough, things happen, and, you know, you want them to happen. Tragedies remind us how much we love someone, and, you know, and there's all sorts of reasons why we can be thankful for all the downs and of course appreciate the ups, but we need skills to navigate all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that reminds me, yes. somehow of a word I heard you use recently.
Okay.
Kindfulness.
Oh, yes. Oh,
kindfulness. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about kindfulness.
Right. Well, mindfulness to me keeps us up in our brains, up in our heads. And what I love about the word kindfulness is that it reminds us that you really can't be mindful without connecting to our hearts. Because really, mindfulness is about being kinder to ourselves, so that we can be kinder to other people and the planet. And so that's just this new word that's kind of trickling through the mindfulness community. And I don't know if it'll stick or not, but I do like it because it is a good reminder.
Mm-hmm. I like that too. It's that reminder of, like you said, being kind to others, the planet, and to ourselves. We can be really hard on ourselves, and that reminder to stay connected to our own hearts too.
Right. And that, you know, it's true. Like, even adults will say, gosh, that was so stupid, you know, and I feel like that's an old wound, you know, that's an old tape, you know, someone said to us that we weren't enough. And I just think if we're just curious about kids' emotional experiences to life, then they'll be curious about it too. And they won't have that shame around, you know, difficult emotions or quote unquote negative emotions. Because, you know, anger is a really good force. You know, it brings around political change, and it gets you out of bad marriages, and, you know, and gets people away from you if they're being weird on the street to you. You know, it's like, we that's not a negative emotion. That's a great emotion to have in that particular moment. So it's antiquated, the words negative and positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's such a good point. Something that actually I'm very curious about. What are your next steps? Ooh. I would love to hear what you have in store in the near future.
So Puppy Mind has been turned into like a Sesame Street style TV experience, which will be broadcast on local television here in San Francisco on KTVU, which is a Fox affiliate. And then it'll also be distributed to the school district in San Francisco. And then hopefully it'll go national, perhaps on other TV stations or other school districts. And it's live action. There's a young actor, and he has a puppy mind, and the puppy is a beautiful dog puppet from the San Francisco Opera that you know, has all these working parts and everything. And yeah, so it looks really good. I wrote the script and I'm really proud of it.
Congratulations. That's very exciting.
I'm super excited. And yeah, we'll see where it, you know, it goes. Maybe Hollywood will call. You never know.
Right? Absolutely. And I'm hoping that they will be putting it onto a platform that we can access and view nationwide. That would be so fun to see.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope I have access to it as well. I have a website or a couple of websites that I manage that people hopefully can go to and watch there.
Wonderful. Well, we will definitely be putting Andrew's information, websites, ways that you can connect with him, and opportunities to purchase the books or the cards if you would like to as well. We'll put that into the show notes. Great. So you have all access to that as well.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, and definitely keep us updated. We would love to hear how it goes.
I will. I'm excited to share it with the world.
Any last pieces of information that you'd like to share today?
I don't think so, except just, you know, be kind to yourselves overall and lean into that mindfulness practice, because it really just keeps unfolding and I think enriches lives if we allow it to.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much again for joining us, Andrew, and for sharing everything that you have today.
Absolutely. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you for spending your time with us today. And if you found value in this episode, please share it. We welcome more compassionate educators to the conversation, which hopefully will make our world just a little bit brighter today. See you next time.